Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, start of chapter 30. The Gopis search for Krishna. Let's turn this down a bit. So I'll just read through the chapter summary. This chapter describes how the gopis, tormented through the long night by separation from Krishna, wandered like mad women from forest to forest in search of him. When Sri Krishna suddenly disappeared from the arena of the rasa dance, the gopis, their minds fully absorbed in thoughts of him, began looking for him in the various forests. From all the moving and non-moving creatures, they asked for news of Krishna's whereabouts. Finally, they became so distraught that they began imitating his pastimes. Later, while wandering in the corner of the forest, the gopis saw Sri Krishna's footprints, which appeared mixed with Srimati Radharani's. Seeing these footprints perturbed them greatly, and they declared that surely Srimati Radharani must have worshipped Krishna with unusual excellence, since she had been privileged to associate with him in seclusion. Further along the path, the gopis came to a place where they could no longer see Srimati Radharani's footprints. They then concluded that Krishna must have taken Radharani onto his shoulders. In another place, they noticed that Krishna's footprints were showing only the toes, and thus the gopis concluded he had been picking flowers with which to decorate his beloved. In yet another spot, the gopis saw signs that led them to imagine that Sri Krishna had been tying the locks of Srimati Radharani's hair. All these thoughts brought pain to the gopis' minds. Because of the special attention she received from Krishna, Sri Radha began to consider herself the most fortunate of women. She told him that she could walk no further and that he would have to carry her on his shoulders. But just then, Lord Krishna disappeared from her sight. Srimati Radharani, extremely troubled, then began looking everywhere for him. When she finally met her gopi girlfriends, she related to them what had happened. All the gopis then went out to look for Krishna in the forest, going as far as the moonlight reached. But in the end they were unsuccessful, so they went back to the shore of the Yamuna and simply sang Krishna's glories in utter helplessness. So text number one. Sri Shuka Uvacha. Antahite Bhagavati. Sahasaiva Brajangana Atapyamstam Achakshana Karanya Iva Yutapam Sri Shuka Uvacha Antahite Bhagavati Sahasaiva Brajangana Ata Pyamstam Achakshana Karanya Iva Yutapam Sri Shuka Uvacha Antahite Bhagavati Sahasaiva Brajangana Atapyamstam Achakshana Karanya Iva Yutapam Shukadev Goswami said, Antahite, when he disappeared, Bhagavati, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sahasaiva, quite suddenly, Prajangana, the young ladies of Raj, Atapyam, felt remorse. Actually, it's felt great remorse. Tam, him, Achakshana, not seen. Karanya, female elephants. Eva, just as Yutapam, their male leader. Translation. Shukadeva Goswami said, when Lord Krishna disappeared so suddenly, the gopis felt great sorrow at losing sight of him, like a group of female elephants who have lost their mate. Text number 2. As the cowherd women remembered Lord Krishna, their hearts were overwhelmed by his movements and loving smiles, his playful glances and enchanting talks, and by the many other pastimes he would enjoy with them. Thus absorbed in thoughts of Krishna, the Lord of Ram, the gopis began acting out his various transcendental pastimes. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur describes the following charming exchange between Krishna and the gopis. Krishna said to a gopi, my dear land lily, are you going to offer your honey to this very thirsty honeybee or not? The gopi replied, my dear bee, the husband of the lilies is the sun, not the bee. So why are you claiming that my honey belongs to you? But my dear lily, the very nature of you lilies is that you don't give your honey to your husband, the sun, but rather to your paramour, the bee. The gopi, defeated by the words of Krishna, laughed and then gave him her lips as honey to drink. Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti also describes the following conversation. Krishna said to a gopi, ah, I can understand that as you approach this nipa tree standing here, you're bitten by an audacious snake. Its venom has already reached your chest, but since you are a respectable maiden, you haven't asked me to cure you. Still, I've come, being merciful by nature. Now, while I massage your body with my hands, I'll chant a mantra to counteract the serpent's poison. The gopi said, but my dear snake charmer, no snake has bitten me. Go massage the body of some girl who actually has suffered a snake bite. Come now, my dear respectable girl. From your trembling voice, I can tell that you are experiencing a feverish reaction to poisoning. Knowing this, if I don't take care of you, I'll be guilty of killing an innocent woman. So let me treat you. With this, Krishna applied his fingernails to the gopi's chest. Yamagana Chimanandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshomnitam Yena Tasma Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Shkapitam Yena Bhutile Swamrubhudam Ayam Dadati Swabhudam Shikam Tatta Kamchana Vorandi Radhe Brindavaneshwari Brishabhanu Sutta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasari Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So it's an interesting part of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Just after Krishna has met the gopis in the forest, and he's just disappeared from their sight. As we're hearing in the previous chapter, the reason for this is because Krishna disappeared from the gopis because of their pride, which is a very interesting point. How when a devotee has maybe feelings of pride within their consciousness, then Krishna may change his attitude towards that devotee. And in this case, we can see with the gopis that Krishna understood there was some pride within them, thinking that, yes, we're the best devotees. No one else is associating with Krishna like we are. We're so fortunate. So Krishna, detecting the mentality, he changes his attitude towards the gopis, who are the topmost devotees of Krishna. And so this change in attitude of Krishna is manifest by the fact that he disappears from them. Calls them out of the forest and disappears. So this is Krishna. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and as Prabhupada would explain, that he is also supremely independent. That Krishna is, as a person, has a right to act on his own independent thoughts. Of course, as we know in the Nectar of Devotion by Rupa Goswami, he explains that out of the six characteristics of pure devotional service, one of those is that it brings Krishna under control. When one has pure love for Krishna, then Krishna becomes under the control of that devotee. So we know that Krishna is controlled by the devotion of the residents of Braj, especially the gopis. But in this case here, we can see that Krishna is bestowing a certain mercy upon them by disappearing from their vision. But actually what this does, it just increases your love for Krishna. We're seeing a glimpse of insanity brought about by ecstatic love of Godhead. So one can be insane in the material world, and one can be insane on the spiritual platform as well, but they're a different quality of insanity. We want the spiritual insanity, not the material insanity, because material insanity means forgetting who we are. We see everybody in the material world, to some degree, as Prabhupada explained, is insane, because they've forgotten who they are. They've forgotten their original position. They've forgotten their relationship with Krishna. As a result of that ignorance, then they identify with the material body. So identification of the self with the material body is a type of insanity, because it's not who you are. One who identifies with the material body has to pursue all the desires and demands forced upon them by the modes of material nature and the senses in the body. So you can see a whole civilization which is based on this sort of insanity isn't a very nice one. Not a very peaceful one at all. As it says in the Bhagavatam, that this sort of civilization, people are always disturbed, constantly disturbed because of this misidentification with the material body. Now, so much anxiety is brought about by this misidentification with the body. So much anxiety, so many problems. So as we know, a verse in the Sarva Parivane Muktam Tat Parintva Nimalam Hushikena Hushikesha Sevanam Bhakta Uchite, that by engaging in devotional service, then one becomes free of these material designations and one's senses become purified. So this is the way to become purified of insanity, material insanity, is by engaging the senses in the service of the master of the senses, Krishna. This is the cure for insanity. This is how the panacea, or the real medicine to cure all ills. Instead of looking at, as Prabhupada would say, so many commissions and United Nations and so many different organisations trying to solve problems, the real solution is through engaging in devotional service to Krishna. Because by doing this, one can understand their proper identity. One can understand actually the original origin that they come from, and therefore they can understand how they should be acting appropriately. So devotional service, bhakti yoga, is the essence. That is the cure. So when we see the Srimad Bhagavatam, we're seeing another sort of insanity being brought about by ecstatic love of Godhead. So all of these symptoms being manifest by the gopis have no material qualities at all. They're not under the modes of material nature. This is a sort of insanity brought about by ecstatic love of Godhead. When you read the Nectar of Devotion, it talks about the different sorts of ecstatic symptoms that are aroused within the hearts of the devotees, and one of those is actually madness. So the gopis personify this madness very nicely by they can't find Krishna, and there's in so much anxiety that all they can do is begin talking about him, and they begin wandering around the forest. It's like sometimes, if you've ever seen it before, people, when you're out in your day-to-day journeys in the outside world, and you might see people talking to a tree, or you might see somebody talking to somebody who's not actually there, they're having a conversation with somebody who's not there. So this is obviously madness. So the gopis, they were also doing this. They were walking around the forest and they were talking to the trees and the different plants and so forth. But their consciousness was understanding that everything is connected to Krishna. So they were asking all the trees, have you seen Krishna? Where is Krishna? Tell us, where is Krishna? Whereas we see most people, when they talk to trees in the material world, is because they're a little bit loopy, a little bit crazy, lost the plot a little bit. But in the case of the gopis, madness is being brought about by their pure devotion for Krishna, not seeing anything separate from Krishna. So they walk around the forest asking where Krishna is. And then when they can't find him, then they begin acting out Krishna's pastimes. This is their love, their devotion. So intense is their devotion, it's quite hard to conceive actually, this devotion that the gopis have for Krishna. We can only really understand it through the acharyas, and the explanations given by the acharyas. And when you read books like Nectar of Devotion, then we can get a slight glimmer of understanding of this devotion that the gopis have for Krishna, this Braj Bhakti, very, very unique form of devotion, only found within the residents of Vrindavan. So this section of the Bhagavatam is actually taking us to the pinnacle, or the heights of Bhakti Yoga. And we know that famous verse in the Bhagavad Gita, Yogi Namapi Savasham Madgatin Ante Atmaha Shadavan Bhajate Yomam Same Yuktato Mata. Is that correct? 15th chapter, where Krishna says, out of all yogis, one who's always thinking of me within himself and renders devotion to me with great faith, then he's the topmost of all yogis. So we're hearing about now the topmost of all transcendentalists, the gopis. The gopis are in a much superior position than the great tapasvis or mystic yogis, you know, who may go to the Himalayas and meditate in caves, or yogis, you hear stories of yogis who can travel through the Ganga, through the mystic power, they can travel hundreds of kilometres down the Ganga and pop up at different sections or different areas by travelling through the Ganga, or different yogis who may be able to travel to travel on the sun rays into the sun planet. So many different sorts of mystic yogis and tapasvis who perform great austerities so they can get mystic powers, but these are actually just very insignificant in comparison to what we're reading about in the Srimad Bhagavatam. These are the topmost of all yogis, the gopis. So this is the sort of yoga that we are aspiring to attain, this level of devotion that the gopis have for Krishna. That is the topmost of all yoga systems, is bhakti yoga. So it's very fortunate that we're able to read and understand these pastimes and get an entrance or a slight window into the affairs of the spiritual world, and the sort of consciousness and attitude that the residents have within Goloka Vrindavan. Because bhakti is obviously, a lot of it is based on having the proper attitude, the correct mentality. And so we have to understand the correct mentality through the example given through the residents of Vrindavan, and also through the attitude given to us through the acharyas. The different acharyas within the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, they're giving us the appropriate attitude to have. And a big emphasis that a lot of the acharyas focus on is becoming humble, developing humility. Because as we're hearing here, that Krishna doesn't appreciate pride within the hearts of his devotees. Especially when devotees start thinking that their service is superior to all other devotees' services. Because on the absolute platform, Prabhupada himself would even say that there's no difference between being on the altar and rendering service to the deity and being in the garden, doing gardening work for Krishna. On the absolute platform, there's no difference. So when one has the proper mentality, one can see things in that light, that there is no difference between being on the altar, rendering service for the deity, and looking after Krishna's garden for him on the absolute platform. There's no distinction. So it's all about the attitude, having the proper mentality, and not thinking that, yes, I am now Brahmana, I have my sacred thread, and I am on the altar, and I am very, 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 very important devotee now. Because we can see that famous story in Vrindavan, when some of Prabhupada's disciples went to visit the Radharaman temple, I think it was. There's two sannyasi disciples of Srila Prabhupada, and they were in this temple, and the puja in the temple was saying, yes, you're doing very, very nicely, you just keep doing what you're doing, and in your next lifetime you'll be able to take birth as a pujari and render service to the deity in this temple. And so the disciples went back to Srila Prabhupada and explained to him what this pujari was saying, and Prabhupada said to him, no, what you should say to him is actually, no, if you keep doing what you're doing in this lifetime, in the next lifetime you might be fortunate to take birth in ISKCON, as a Sankirtan devotee, as a devotee in Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement within ISKCON. So that was Prabhupada's mentality. He understood properly that It's not one's position that they may have within rendering devotional service, but it's one's mentality, one's attitude, having the proper attitude. And we understand this attitude nicely through the acharyas. So many nice prayers we can read offered by the great acharyas within our sampradaya, exemplifying this mood of humility. And also, obviously, the famous Shikshastakam verse by Lord Chaitanya about becoming more tolerant in a tree, being more humble than a blade of grass. So obviously this quality of pridelessness and humility is important in making advancement in devotional life. It's very hard to progress in spiritual life when one has pride within the heart. Very, very, very difficult. And of course, by being in the fire of devotional service, these qualities are removed from the heart by chanting Hare Krishna. As Lord Chaitanya says, Chaito Dapan Marjanam, that one must cleanse the heart, cleanse the mirror of the mind, get rid of all the unwanted anattas within the heart. So the fire of devotional service, if one engages within it, then these things will automatically be purified, will be removed. So we know that Shridha Swami, I was reading a nice prayer by him actually, which was in one of the purports in the 10th canto, and it's a nice prayer which struck me about exemplifying this mood of humility. It's a very heartfelt prayer, because we understand when the acharyas are composing these prayers, it's not that they're doing it for getting some poetic glorification, thinking yes, I'll be known as a great poet, but they're expressing their sentiments within the heart. So they're not very nice to meditate upon. So this is a prayer by Shridha Swami. My dear Lord, when will I give up all sense gratification and engage incessantly in meditating upon you? And when will I take up residence in the hermitages of saintly devotees, free from false pride? Then I will become fully immersed in the inundation of nectar pouring from the devotees' lotus mouths as they chant sacred narrations about you. And then, O Lord Narahari, I'll never again have to take a material body. It's a very, very nice prayer, showing the proper attitude to have, praying to the Lord very fervently and very earnestly about becoming free of sense gratification, and praying for the association of devotees, and praying to become free from false pride, because obviously there's a relationship between our consciousness and our level of hearing. We know that when our consciousness is contaminated through so many qualities, you know, mada, moha, krodha, moha, so many different things, anger, lust, greed, envy, illusion, fear, so many things are in a consciousness that affects our hearing ability. So we have to be able to appreciate fully hearing the narrations given by devotees, the consciousness has to be purified to some degree. Because we know that sometimes when we're chanting Hare Krishna, we're trying to hear, then so many mundane thoughts and emotions are appearing within the psychology. You know, so many thoughts of mundane activities we're doing in our pre-devotional lives, or lust, envy, pride, so many things within the heart which are manifested when we're hearing and chanting. So we have to pray for these things to be removed, so that we can, not so much that we want them, you know, please take these things from my heart, but we want them removed for a purpose, for a reason, and the reason is so we can relish more and more hearing about Krishna's pastimes. So we get this proper attitude through the prayers and bhajan given by the previous acharyas, especially Bhakti Vinod Thakur, a very prolific writer and a great poet who wrote so many wonderful bhajans about becoming free from pride. Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur also wrote great poetry about the mind. Then the mind become free of, was it, Ohe, that's a famous verse by Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati, the prayer where he's, what sort of a Vaishnava are you? What's the name of that? What's the name? Vaishnava Ki. What sort of Vaishnava are you? Yeah, very, very nice, exemplifying his humility, thinking you're so great, but really you're just, you're nothing really. So that's the mood of a devotee. It's a symptom of our advancement, is this mood of pridelessness. And that will exemplify, or will be manifest in our in our devotional service. Our attitude comes out very clearly in our devotional service. So this is pleasing to Krishna. Now, when he sees the attitude is correct, that is what Krishna is actually looking for in our devotion. Not necessarily just the physical offerings, but the attitude behind it, the proper consciousness. That's pleasing to Krishna. Like we can see here with the gopis, that their attitude, the pride may have been manifest within their heart, so Krishna changed his attitude towards them by disappearing from their vision. So we can see Krishna will reciprocate with us according to our attitude, the mood that we have. So Krishna is a person. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so he knows how to reciprocate with his parts and parcels in the most appropriate way. As Prabhupada would say, that the acharyas in our sampradaya, they define bhakti yoga as the path of devotional service. Because sometimes people say bhakti devotion, but devotional service, that's how acharyas define bhakti yoga. So devotional service is about obviously doing something for Krishna in a way which is pleasing to him, and we know what's pleasing to Krishna because in the Nectar of Devotion, Rupa Goswami talks about the 64 ways of rendering devotional service in a way pleasing to Krishna. So that has to be there, but also cultivating the proper mentality at the same time. Both things have to be there. So Krishna within the heart, he understands our mentality, and he understands our service attitude, and he will reciprocate accordingly. So the more one is becoming purified of material contamination and is cultivating the proper attitude, then the more reciprocation there is from Krishna. Is that, he says that I reciprocate according to your affection. Now, if one has affection for me, te shamsa sati yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam, if one has this priti devotion, then I will reciprocate with you accordingly. So this is the qualification for entering into deeper realms of consciousness and understanding of Krishna, is through the proper attitude, this attitude of devotion. Because devotional service shouldn't be rendered in a resentful way. And sometimes even I'm guilty of that as well. I'll be the first to admit it. And sometimes we do devotional service, but the attitude maybe is in a resentful way. Why am I doing this for? I don't want to be doing this. I'd rather be doing something else. So that's not very pleasing to Krishna. So we have to be very conscious of our mentality and attitude when we're rendering the devotional service. We have to keep everything in the proper context, that we're in a very, very fortunate position. A very, very fortunate position in the fact that we are able to have a facility that we can render devotion to Krishna. Very, very fortunate. And when we think about it, that most people have no interest in Krishna anymore. They've forgotten about Krishna. That's why they're in the material world for. So we're very fortunate that we are in a position where we have realised that, yes, we've made a mistake, we are a servant of Krishna. So we should have the proper attitude when we're rendering service in a way pleasing to Krishna. Because we know that's what Krishna is looking for. He's looking for the reciprocation in consciousness, the reciprocation in attitude. So if we're doing things but in a resentful way, then of course we're not going to get much reciprocation from Krishna. But if we're rendering our service in a way which is very humble and in a very service orientated focus, then it's very, very pleasing to him. So obviously there'd be more reciprocation from Krishna. And you can see examples of devotees in our movement who have been practicing for a very long time. You can see they have cultivated over time the proper mentality, the proper service attitude is there. We're talking about Tamal Krishna Maharaj. Keshav was mentioning a couple of days back how in one of his Vyasa Pujas, that he went around personally and was offering sandalwood and offering garlands and gifts to all of his god brothers and god sisters. And after he went around to each individual god brother and god sister, he then sat on the asana and they began the Vyasa Puja. So you can see that's the proper attitude. It comes out in these advanced devotees, the service attitude of serving the Vaishnavas very nicely. In fact, that's more pleasing to Krishna than just serving him, but serving his devotees, that is more pleasing, rendering service to the Vaishnavas. So we can see that when devotees are making advancement, then they realise this, that actually I'm a servant of the servant of the servant, twice removed. You know? And Lord Chaitanya says, no, das das anudas, that I'm a servant of the servant of the servant. So that's the mentality of an advanced devotee. They see all the other Vaishnavas, they see themselves as a servant of all the other Vaishnavas. And even if one is a guru or a sannyasi, and like we see with Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he personified that very nicely, that service attitude. So it's very, very inspiring, and it's an example that we should follow. These are the examples we should be following in ISKCON, these great devotees who are showing us how to serve properly with the proper attitude. And you can see these devotees, they've realised these things, and that is what keeps them in the movement for such a long time, is they've realised to stay in the movement you have to be a servant, remain a servant. So that is our position, remaining a humble servant in all circumstances at all times. Because when we forget that we are a servant, then we begin relying again back on our own material abilities, and our material anattas begin manifesting within the heart again. Our pride becomes manifest, that, you know, I don't need to do this, and there's other things I could be doing. Why am I doing this for in the first place? Why am I rendering devotional service for? So we know if that mentality is coming out within the consciousness, we have to be very careful to check that and know the proper steps to take when that attitude is coming out. Try to go back into the fire of devotional service again. Start serving devotees again. Start chanting attentively again. So many things are there to help us. So very, very important. Another point too, that from what we're reading here, from this particular purport we read today, is that we're very nicely getting an insight into Krishna's personality through the commentary of Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. In the Nectar of Devotion, Rupa Goswami talks about different types of personalities, and Krishna is manifesting, I think it's his Dera Lalita personality here, which is his nature of being very joking, exchanging joking words with his devotees. It's one of Krishna's characteristics of his personality, is that he has a sense of humour. Krishna has, God has a sense of humour. So this sense of humour is being exemplified here by this commentary given by Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur when he's exchanging these joking words with the gopis. So this is one of the very attractive qualities of Krishna, is his joking personality. It's very attractive when someone has a sense of humour and they're in a very jovial mood the whole time. It's attractive to people to see that. So Krishna also has this as part of his personality, this jovial, joking mood. And there's so many examples we see in the Bhagavatam of Krishna cracking jokes. When he enters into Mathura and he sees Kubja bent over, then he's with his cowherd boys and he starts cracking jokes, saying, oh beautiful, beautiful lady. And even though she's hunchback, he's making jokes with his friends. So this is Krishna. He likes to exchange joking words with his parts and parcels, his intimate devotees. It's not that he's a very rigid. It's interesting because people and a lot of other religious traditions have this kind of perception of God being a very rigid, a very earnest, a very serious kind of old person with a long grey beard. It's very interesting people's conceptions they have of God, but when you read about what God actually is like, it really alters your complete perceptions of, you know, who the Supreme Personality of God actually is. That he's a person. He enjoys exchanging rasa. You know? He enjoys loving exchanges with his devotees. He likes cracking jokes. You know? It's God. So this is the personality that we're trying to become qualified to get into the association of. So it's attractive. We want to be in Krishna's association for these reasons. So Rupa Goswami has written the Nectar of Devotion for that reason, so we can see who it is that we're trying to actually become qualified to associate with and be attracted to that person. Because for there to be attraction, we have to have knowledge. Otherwise, if we don't have knowledge, then how can there be attraction there? Now, if we want to be attracted to somebody, we have to know a little bit about them, what they're like, what their personality is like. We have to know about these things. So by reading Nectar of Devotion, we can become attracted more and more to Krishna's personality and his pastimes. And as Sridhar Swami says, and the more we're attracted to these things, then we won't have to take another material body again. It's just simply all based on what we're attracted to. The more we're attracted to material life, then we have to take a material body. The more we're attracted to Krishna and his pastimes, then we don't have to take another material body. It's all based on your attitude and your attraction. Simple as that. So the whole process of devotional service is to reawaken what's already within our heart. Jiva Rasarupa Krishna Nichidas, these things are already within our heart. That natural spontaneous attraction for Krishna is there. It's just a matter of reawakening it and bringing it out again through the process of devotional service. So, very, very, very charming. Krishna is very, very, very charming. Very charming pastimes. today also is Shivas Pandit's disappearance day. I only just found that out before I go to class, thanks to Bhakti Glean. So what we could just do is read a short pastime with Shrivas Pandit from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. This is from the Adi Leela, chapter 17. And this is the pastime of when Shrivas Thakur's son passes away. This is just after the pastime with the Chan Kazi. Just after he's had the exchange, the Chan Kazi, where the Kazi was trying to stop Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement, but then Lord Chaitanya has a discourse with him. So at the time, at that time, just after this pastime of Chan Kazi, a calamity took place. Shrivas Thakur's son died, yet Shrivas Thakur was not at all sorry. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu caused the dead son to speak about knowledge, and then the two brothers personally became the sons of Shrivas Thakur. This incident, this is the purport, this incident is described as follows by Sri Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his Amrita Prava Bhashya. One night while Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was dancing with his devotees at the house of Shrivas Thakur, one of Shrivas Thakur's sons, who was suffering from some disease, died. That's where Lord Chaitanya began his Sankirtan was in Shrivas Thakur's house. He used to have private kirtans there with only his very close associates. Shrivas Thakur was so patient, however, that he did not allow anyone to express sorrow by crying, for he did not want the kirtan going on at his house to be disturbed. Thus, this kirtan continued without the sound of lamentation. But when the kirtan was over, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who could understand the incident, declared, "There must have been some calamity in his house." When he was then informed about the death of Shrivas Thakur's son, he expressed his regret, saying, "Why was this news not given to me before?" He went to the place where the son was lying dead and asked him, "My dear boy, why are you leaving the house of Shrivas Thakur?" The dead son immediately replied, "I was living in this house as long as I was destined to live here. Now that the time is over, I am going elsewhere, according to your direction. I am your eternal servant, a dependent living being. I must act only according to your desire. Beyond your desire, I cannot do anything. I have no such power." Hearing these words of the dead son, all the members of Shrivas Thakur's family received transcendental knowledge. Thus there is no cause of lamentation. This transcendental knowledge is described in the Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 2, text 13, Tata dihantara praptya diras tatra na mushite. When someone dies, he accepts another body. Therefore, sober persons do not lament. After the discourse between the dead boy and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, funeral ceremonies were performed, and Lord Chaitanya assured Shrivas Thakur, "You have lost one son, but Nityananda Prabhu and I are your eternal sons. We shall never be able to give up your company." This is an instance of a transcendental relationship with Krishna. We have eternal transcendental relationships with Krishna as his servants, friends, fathers, sons, or conjugal lovers. When the same relationships are perverted or reflected in this material world, we have relationships as the sons, fathers, friends, lovers, masters, or servants of others. But all these relationships are subject to termination within a definite period. If we revive our relationship with Krishna, however, by the grace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, our eternal relationship will never break to cause a lamentation. So there's many other pastimes of Shrivas Thakur. I think Shrivas Thakur, as I understand, was in Chaitanya Leela, he was an incarnation of Narada Muni, which is obviously a devotee of Lord Chaitanya, or a devotee of Lord Krishna. Is one of the Panchatattva, one of the five members of the Panchatattva. Shrivas was the incarnation of the devotee, Narada Muni. So today is his disappearance day. So there's many other wonderful pastimes you can read in the Chaitanya Bhagavat and other books about Lord Chaitanya's Leela. So today is a nice day to meditate upon those pastimes and pray to Srivast Thakur for his mercy upon us in our progress in devotional life. So we'll stop there and ask if there's any questions or points or comments about anything that we've talked about so far. I'll read the text again from Bhagavatam. Shukadeva Goswami said, when Lord Krishna disappeared so suddenly, the gopis felt great sorrow at losing sight of him, like a group of female elephants who have lost their mate. As the cowherd woman remembered Lord Krishna, their hearts were overwhelmed by his movements and loving smiles, his playful glances and enchanting talks, and by many other pastimes he would enjoy with them. Thus absorbed in thoughts of Krishna, the Lord of Ram, the gopis began acting out his various transcendental pastimes. So very nice insight into the ecstatic love of the cowherd girls of Vrindavan, most exalted of all forms of bhakti. Any questions or points at all? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Santaraj.